Good evening, everybody. I'm Jerry Beard, an alcoholic. Hey, what a crowd. Are y'all full yet? I got if you ain't, you ought to be. I ain't never seen so much eating. Good eating, what I'm talking about. Before I get started, I want to thank this committee and everybody involved for this invitation. It's an honor when I'm asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially behind the podium. And been a great weekend. These things don't just happen. I said it 10 years ago. I'll say it again. A lot of people get tangled up sometimes. These things take work. I'm on a committee, and I honestly appreciate what it takes to put this deal together. And y'all have done a fantastic job. Give yourself a hand for it. Started out with Lorena calling me, and she stayed in touch, and it's just been a fine-tuned operation. I'm so proud to be a part of it. We've had some good speakers, and it's Ackworth week here. I never seen the like, and y'all got to hear Julie started off last night. Fantastic. I love her, and I appreciate her, and she's a miracle. Jeanette done a great job this morning, I thought. And a young man this afternoon, Zach, followed up. I identify with all of them, and I hope you did. And it's just, I can't say enough about being here and honored to have the privilege tonight to try to share my experience, strength, and hope. I want to put out a little disclaimer here before we get started. It's a friend of mine up in Cleveland, Ohio. He had the best thing I come up with. He talked about this guy riding down the road with a bunch of penguins in the back of his little pickup truck. And a policeman stopped him and said, "What in the world are you doing with that load of penguins?" And he said, "You better take those things, young man, to the zoo." Young man said, "Okay." So the next day, he come down the road again with the same load of penguins in the back of that truck. Had on sunglasses this time. Same policeman stopped him and says, "What in the world are you doing now?" He said, "I told you to take those penguins to the zoo yesterday." He said, "I did. We're going to the beach today." What I say and what y'all hear may be a little different. Zach reminded me this afternoon. Another one here, and I'll cut out this BS in a minute and get started. But about the attitude, you know, and said he couldn't get his attitude right and all that. And heard about this test they're running on two young men. And put one of them in a room full of this young kid, all the fancy toys you could ever imagine. He had a bad attitude. Put another young man in a room full of horse manure. And so they left him in there for a little while, and they come back, trying to do their fancy study, and they said, asked that young man, "Well, how was it told?" He said, "Battery's dead on this one. The on and off switch don't work on this one either. Just sucked." Went to the next room, little boy in there in that room full of horse manure, and he was just slinging that stuff everywhere, laughing, cutting up. They said, "What in the world is the matter with you, son?" He said, "This much horse shit, they got to be a pony in here somewhere." The attitude, according to how we look at things, you know. First of all, I give you my name. I try to do the basics I was taught. If I'm going to get behind this podium, they said, my sponsor told me years ago, he said, "Jerry, three basic things. You may not ever make a speaker or a talker, but there's three things you can do." He said, "You can show up on time, you can clean up, and you can get prayed up." So whatever comes, y'all. And I want to say this, too. I'm going to talk about God something. And if God runs you out here, liquor will run your ass back. I want to put that disclaimer out there. But I've tried to do those three things. And my sobriety date is November the 5th, 1985. My home group's on Tuesday night at North Star Church in Ackworth, if you're ever around there, Solutions Group at 7 p.m. Be glad to have you. I got a sponsor, as Julie says. I sponsor people, and they sponsor people. And I'm just in the middle. I'm not unique. I've been blessed. Been blessed. Y'all looking at a drunk born on the wrong side of the tracks in Ackworth, Georgia. in an alcoholic family. I believe alcoholism, again, my man done a great job this evening. I'm proud of him. I was born an alcoholic right from the get-go. There's no doubt in my mind as I look back. I was born into the family of it. There were seven kids. Five of us either dead or hospitalized as a result of alcoholism. My dad probably died an early death of alcoholism. I'm going to go through some of that later on, but to give you a little background of what it was like there. I said I was born on the wrong side of the tracks. I never went without a meal. I always had enough to, don't let me paint no bad, bad picture here. I never starved to death, had something to wear. But my dad got sick early on. I was in the third grade of school, 8 years old. He had lung cancer, and thank God we had a little place there in Ackworth. But money got tight. This was before, you see, they tell me alcoholism is only a symptom of the disease. And I believe that, and I've been blessed to be around this program long enough to understand some of it. And I want to put this out there, too, before I get cranked up here too much. Jeanette talked about today, you know, the effects of alcohol. I was just at a big book study the other night. Was going reading this on my mind. It was in the doctor's opinion. And the line in there, it talks about we drank for the effect. Men and women drank for the effect. Well, see, normal drinkers, they don't get the same effect we get. And Jeanette talked about she could drink one and just feel a little bit easy. Well, that's the difference. I drank one and feel a little bit easy. All I done is lift the pilot light. I've set off that phenomenal of craving, and I'm going on to the bitter end. But where I'm heading with that, too, before I ever had my first drink, I was irritable, restless, and discontent. 12 years old. All this done in my head. I just couldn't. I always wanted something at that young age, and I couldn't understand it. And that grandson that Jeanette talked about this morning, you can just see it. You can see it, and it's a horrendous disease. It's terrible. But anyhow, at 12, as I look back and I've done the stuff and done the inventories, that's when I started really, I felt like, to hurt people. Never had a drink yet. A lot of stuff happened to me when I was 12 years old. Money got tight. Let me put this out there, too. I always had a bad thing that I call big shot itis. Even though I was born on the wrong side of the tracks, I wanted to be across town with the people that had the money, the people that wore Levi's. Not that the jeans didn't come from Allen's 5-10 cent store and shit like that. I wanted the real deal in my mind. Was going skating, Rawler Street, Marietta. At that time, it was 95 cents to rent the skates, the whole nine yards. And I kept on my mother that done went through holy hell on this earth with alcoholics and junk, all me, the youngest of the crowd. She done been through enough. A good Christian woman. You see, that's where I was raised. Not a better proving ground, in my thought, for an alcoholic than a good Southern Baptist, and an alcoholic for a daddy, and a Southern Baptist for a mama. And she was a good Christian woman. She didn't deserve what was told to her, this family disease. But anyhow, where I'm heading with this, I asked her for a dollar. She said, son, there's not a dollar on the hill. She started crying, and I seen them. You know, I said, Jerry, what in the world? At 12 years old, I said, what in the world? Why am I, my thinking was, because it's all about me all the time. I could not understand. Right there, the first thing happened at 12. I was saved in a Baptist church. What they called it back then, I still believe in. That was a good feeling, but it was short-lived. Sometime in that same year, and I can't tell you the dates, within a year, I found alcohol. And that was the next higher power for me, baby. Because I'm the one of the type of alcoholics described in the book. It worked magic. If you'll read the vision view on page 151, it talks about at the top how it starts off. And it comes all the way on down to the four hideous horsemen. All right, I was one of those that when I put that drink, before I put it in there, even though after I was saved in that Baptist church, I was still irritable, restless, and discontent. I was too short, I was too fat, I had buck teeth, and I was scared of Jim Smith that lived down the street. Now, if it's not magic, when you can drink two Carling Black Labels and all that stuff goes away, what else could you call it? And I can't even tell you I drank all the two beers. I drank enough of it that it changed how I felt up here. I wasn't too short, I wasn't too fat, and buck teeth didn't bother me, and I wasn't scared of Jim Smith. What else could you ask for? I'm not going to tell you I started drinking alcohol at 12 years old. I started drinking every time I could and go through all the stuff that we do as kids. If you get a hold of it early, I drank every opportunity I got, weekend, da-da-da-da-da. And watching one of my heroes progress with this disease, a brother named Charles. I'll get into some more after a while, but he was 20 years older than me, 19 years. I come along 9 years. No wonder I drank so much. One of my brothers told me I was a damn accident, mistake anyway. You know, what are they going to do for somebody? They'd have called you to drink liquor when they told you. Mistake in life to start with. But anyhow, where's that? I'm going to start over that phone. No. Got to 17 years old, and that's the first time to bail everyone off that I might drink different. The same guy that I got those first two Carling Black Label beers with, his older sister is the one that got them for us. And you talking about a beautiful woman. Woo-woo! I don't know whether some of you in the room remember Ackworth Beach, somebody, that's when he opened that thing. She was wearing two-piece bathing suit when they wasn't wearing two-piece bathing suits now. And I mean, she was pretty. Died of alcoholism at 40 years old, cirrhosis of the liver. She gave me the first two beers, and she bought myself and Johnny a fifth of Seagram 7 down at the Dobbins Air Force Base, and we had his mom and daddy's house there for a little while. We do what a teenager do, drunk, drinking, start. And I started drinking, and Johnny was one of these, and he's still figuring to this day, and he's just about figured himself in the grave. He'd come up with all kind of remedies here at 17 years old. You might be an alcoholic if you're trying to figure out how you can drink and not get sick and not get drunk. Johnny come up, he had me eating butter sandwiches and all kind of stuff, and I get this sick as a dog, you know. I said, Johnny, don't come up with no more remedies, you know. I don't need them. We drank that, I started drinking. He said, you're drinking too fast. I said, I got it. I drank that fifth of whiskey in a short period of time. You know what happened to a 17-year-old kid putting a fifth of whiskey in there. You know, bad stuff's going to happen. I was sick of the dog, drunk, begging him to carry me to the hospital and get my stomach pumped out. He said, come on down here. I got something for you. He pulled a rocking chair out in the backyard and rocked me, and it come out. He said, you'll be all right. You'll be all right. That was the first time that I describes what we go through trying to change what we drink, when we drink, and to adjust it. Okay, this mom that I had, that $1 deal, if I could ever call back any men, that would have been it right there. But it wasn't, and some of you in the room old enough to remember old Merle Haggard. Merle Haggard had a song out, Mama Tried. Well, that's what happened. I was the youngest of seven, the only one that didn't finish high school, and I'm not proud of that. Because she cried like cried like a baby when I quit, and I was running and gunning, and I wanted to be on the other side of the streets, other side of the track so bad. I went to work early in high school. I worked a lot because I made up my mind at that time when I was 12 years old, I was going to wear Levi's. And I started wearing Levi's. And I had a charter account. I paid $1 a week on them, and I worked, hard. And at 17, I had it figured out. Again, I think about my man talking to that. All this figuring, you know, my mind's like a bad neighborhood. I need to stay out of it then. I need to now. But I got to figuring. Sometimes this day, I'll be riding down the road minding my own business. My mind just jump out and get me. And I'm like, where in the hell did that come from? Well, I've done a lot of figuring. I started figuring if I didn't drink liquor no more, just drank beer, I was going to be okay. I could stay out of trouble. Watching this brother of mine progress, I was going on a 12-step call at 17 years old. Because Charles was a binge drinker. When he drank, he was going down, baby. One or two ways. He drank up a business. He drank up a job at Lockheed. But he was a binge drinker. I kept watching him. I said, I'm not like him. Because he was going to the hospital or he was going to jail when he got on one. I took him to some of those places. And what do we all say? You've heard, if you've been in here 2 weeks, you've heard it. I wasn't going to be like him. I wasn't going to be like my daddy. I wasn't going to be like people say their mom and their sister. I ain't got nothing new. Quit high school. Had these grandiose plans. Some of you, a lot of you probably familiar with Atlanta. But Boomer Shine Pontiac was on Spring Street in Atlanta. I wanted me a black GTO. I could just see me in it. I could just see it. I was going to move to Atlanta, get me an apartment, have me a bar in it, and have all the pretty girls in Atlanta. Just, I could just see it. Well, when I quit high school, I was driving a feed truck. There's nothing wrong with driving a feed truck. Only time I ever got locked up when I wasn't drinking was in that damn feed truck speeding, going to get a drink in Dallas, Georgia. We do some crazy things, but we're not stupid. It didn't take me long to figure out. I'd done in my mess kit. I knew I'd done. I said, I got to do something here. I'm not making enough money to go to Atlanta and buy no GTO and be in no apartment. I was just surviving. I said, Jerry, you messed up. The only out for you is go in the Army. Volunteer for the draft. Took an old feed truck down on the square in Maryland. We'll get an old buddy of mine. He's following. He said, you ain't going to do that. I said, follow me. Took an old feed truck, went up the draft board. Asked Lady, I said, if I volunteer for the draft, I just turned 18. I said, if I volunteer for the draft, how long before get drafted? She said, this was in November. She said, oh, it's probably March. She said, we didn't fill our quota for so-and-so. She said, sign right here. I signed. About 2 weeks later, I got a letter that said, order of induction. January the 11th. That was a rude awakening when I got to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Plus, I started having relationship problems. Little guy sort of broke my heart there, and I said, I'll fix her. But you know how we think. I'm doing some more at figuring. I'll show her ass. I joined the Army. First night there, I said, what have I done? She's still in the act. We're living the good life. Done dating another old boy. That was quite an experience. One of the best things I've ever done, though. I ain't going to lie to you. Other than alcoholics, no, one of the best things I ever done was going on. Got out of basic training. Went up, going to Fort Bend. I was supposed to have been, went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. I was supposed to have been a demolition expert. Wound up at Fort Benning as an operations clerk. The only thing I learned in high school was how to type. And it come in handy, baby. I'd become an operations clerk. My first sergeant was an alcoholic. Or he drank a lot. My operations sergeant was an alcoholic. I was riding, it was like throwing a rabbit in the briar patch. This first sergeant I'm talking about reminded me of Charles, my brother. I was telling you about. He had that old deep cigarette cough. He smoked Chesterfield. As crazy as that may sound, my brother smoked them old Pall Malls, and here I was smoking Marlboro with Field Room. I said, shit, this is how am I thinking? Thinking bad. I'm going to PX and get me some Lucky Strikes, huh? $1.90 a carton. Shit, I smoked them up, baby. Hey, that was the first test I ever took, too. Y'all ever took any of these tests in the Reader's Digest? I don't know how I got a hold of that. Started reading, talking about you smoking. Yeah, I was 18 years old. I don't know if you thought you was addicted. I remember seeing that thing coming down the question. I answered every one of them wrong. Want to know, did you smoke in the morning as soon as you got up? Well, hell, I smoked during the night when I got up to go to the restaurant. That done me with them tests. I seen these alcohol tests later on. I done had one. I'm through them tests. Anyway, old Sergeant Vaughn came in there one day, and he said, Bearden, said, I'm going to take you to the NCO club with me. I said, Top, I got a disclaimer for you here now before we go. I can't drink no liquor. He said, what's the matter with you? I said, I drink beer. But I said, liquor, I get crazy. Yeah, boy, I said, come on. I'm going to teach you how. That was my next hero behind Charlie. He sounded like him coughing, carrying on, shit, you know, he'd come in about dead in the morning. You better have your coffee made, you know. A man going to teach me how to drink liquor? 18 years old. I'm all in. He said, all right, what you got to do is drink it straight or drink it with water. He said, don't mix it with nothing. I said, maybe it was a Coca-Cola that got me. I don't know. Maybe he's on to something here. Y'all know how long that lasted. Not long. I went back and I went to drinking liquor and I continued to drink liquor. All right. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. Kept getting orders to go to Vietnam. Had a company commander down there, took care of me. A 12B20 MOS, anybody ever? Demolition expert. I couldn't blow up a damn firecracker. Here I was about to send me to Vietnam. I said, man, I'd kill more of us than I would them. I'm scared. Okay, my dad was probably one of us. My dad, he was the type that come from grown men don't cry and they don't say I love you. That's the only, only time I ever seen my dad shed a tear. He'd already been through some of it with my brothers and all that. He knew what was happening. I said, I'm going to Fort Devon to this TDY. I'll be back. He said, you may not come back soon. Big old tear rolled down his eye. I said, shit. Maybe he wasn't as bad as I thought he was. Anyway, I go on to Fort Devon, Massachusetts, show up. September, went through New York City. Take a drunk like me and never been out of Georgia, but four of us met Times Square in New York City, if you can imagine that. That's the first time I believe God was doing me what I couldn't do for myself. One of the guys lived out in the Bronx, and we stayed on Times Square, and Times Square wasn't nice like it is now. It was whatever you wanted, you get there. Went out, and they sent me back from the Bronx in a taxi. Taxi cab driver woke me up. He said, I don't know where you're from, what you're doing. He said, I know your GI and whatever money you got's in your shoe, but you ain't going to last long in this town if you keep it up what you're doing. I didn't know how to appreciate it at the time. You know what I'd done? Got out, went to the room, started drinking some more. Went on to Fort Devon, Massachusetts, reported in, company commander said, we're going to train 90 days, and you're due out in January. You ain't going to help me. Put me in a holding company. I said, I ain't lost nothing in Vietnam. So I stayed drunk up there in a holding company from September to January. Met some nice people. I shared with one of the guys here. Got discharged. Come home. Then got me a GED while I was in the Army. I said, I'm ready now. We'll get me a job. Side driving that feed truck. Come to me again. I'm going to Spring Street and get me a black GTO. I could just see it. Four on the floor, three twos on it. See her over there. Don't even know her yet, but I could see her. I could just see her. And then have that apartment. And go to some of the clubs in Atlanta we used to sneak in. You know. Shit. Done 20 years old now. Ain't 21 yet. Couldn't buy a beer legal. I was going to have that bar. Well, things started happening. Started drinking. And, y'all heard some stories last night and today about circumstances. Well, get your butt here. I believe, and this is just a belief, there's two ways you're going to get the alcoholics now. Circumstances, well, that stuff's going to quit working for you. The latter was for me. Circumstances helped these others along here. Here in their story, not to take their inventory, but it wasn't the circumstances, but I'll get into that later. But at that time, stuff started happening that don't happen to normal people. I didn't get that GTO. I got cold feet. Now, I'll tell you in a minute, I got mad, but I got a Catalina Pontiac. had to give it a test run the first Saturday night. I had it at Medacworth Police, and we'd had a few. Tried to outrun them. Well, if I'd had that GTO, I'd probably got them. Went south, and they claimed they clocked me at 120 mile an hour. And all. Back in them days, you know, you go to jail and rot. Anyway, reckless driving, all the stuff go with it. I hate to tell these young folks that, you know, $350 got me out of that mess. But anyway, I swore off drinking and driving that night. The next weekend, was in my same car, one of her old boyfriends driving, and they got me for public drunk and got him for DUI driving my car in Kennesaw. I said, I might swear off drinking and riding, I reckon. And him laying back there hollering, just send my mail to Kennesaw jail. And I thought that cop was going to beat the hell out of both of them. You know? He thought he was cute. Some of them saying like we had, you know.
Yeah.
I thought he could just send my mail to Kennesaw. Yeah. Uptight and cool. I shut your mouth. We ain't going to never get out of that place. Anyhow, during this time, I met my ex. We got pregnant. And, you know, I cared for a lot of years. I say, I got her pregnant. This friend of mine, past state delegate from Augusta, Georgia, they don't call her name, gone with a good big meeting in the sky now. He come to Carver, Georgia, and spoke. He said, me and my wife got pregnant. I said, no shit. It took two of them. That gave me a little relief. I'm not saying it relieved me of my responsibility, but I'm saying I carried a lot of guilt over that for a lot of years. Anyway, we got pregnant. They went to GTO. They went to apartment. They my ass went to work. It went to work big time. And 2 years later, I was lucky enough to get on the railroad. And a few years later, 1969, myself and my brother had a little business in Ackworth and built a mobile home park and done pretty good with it. And my alcoholism started progressing. And that brother of mine that was, I was so close with, Charles, he kept progressing. And I'd watch him and I'd say, I'm not going there, I'm not going there. My sister lived in Michigan, come out a beautiful woman, black-headed, white teeth, dark. Beautiful woman. Seeing it all happen right there, I was going to be different. Doing a lot of heavy figuring. I got this. Moved to the right side of the tracks, built a house, swimming pool in the backyard, a new car on the carport. I owed a lot of money now, but it was there. I was keeping up with the Joneses and working my ass off. And my disease started progressing. I'm here to talk about alcoholism, but I went to the doctor and I said, Doc, my nerves are bad. How much you drinking, Jerry? He done treated my brother. Everybody knew my daddy. How much you drinking, Jerry? Oh, little. He said, all right, I'm going to give you some of your little yellow pill. Called Valium. Shit. That thing worked like magic for a little while there. Get up in the morning, I didn't have to worry about going to work and taking a drink on the job. It's not my story, but it helped out for a while. But this disease progresses. It's going to get worse, worse, and worse if you stay with it. By 10 years later, we sold that business, and the marriage was falling apart, and my alcoholism was progressing. And 1983, I went on the road with the railroad. Most of my career was made right in Atlanta. Well, my son was going to college. He knows, enlighten you a little bit. He's in this program, too. He done a lot of damn figuring. He figured his way out of college. A couple of me out there trying to make enough money to put him there. Went on the road. But you see, my drinking went in three stages. I drank because I wanted to. I drank because I needed to. And I drank because I had to. And when I crossed that line into having to, it was work. But got to go on the road, and this is the God's truth I ever told it. When I come in off one trip, I stopped at the kitchen, and I filled up that quart, empty plastic bottle I had in my suitcase before I went any further to repack my clothes, waiting on the call. And Mike, some of us can identify with it. That liquor was going to be packed before anything else. That's when it really kicked. And that last 3 years of my drinking was hell on earth. Running and gunning But I thought when I first got out there, I said, this ain't so bad, you know. All I got to do is get that hotel room, drink all I want to, nobody to bitch at me, as long as I'm able to answer that phone. Well, you know how I call it. I ain't going to stay in that room too long when I get a few in me, you know. I had to go to Rovern. Alcoholism took me to places I didn't want to go, called me to do things I didn't want to do, and I ain't going into no detail, but a man called me in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and said he'd only way to kill me. Result of me, like Jeanette said, dating and I still married. Another time, God was doing me what I could do for myself, and I able to get out of that scrap and kept on, and it kept progressing. And I lost that brother at 22. And I'd get in a hotel room up there, and I'd go to preaching a sermon to that bottle. Now, insane as this may sound, I'd mark it, and we've all brother done it. And I said, this is all I'm going to drink. Well, I'd done lost the battle. Alcohol was telling me when to drink. I was never going to drink on the job. I was never going to run around my wife. I was never going to let my son be affected by this. Alcoholism, if you got it my type, it will take it away, y'all. Alcoholism will take away everything good in your life. It'll beat your ass in the ground. Well, I'd sit there and I'd preach that alcohol. I said, I've seen what you've done to that brother of mine. You ain't going to do it to me. I'd put the alcohol in a drawer. However insane this is, get the Bible out where I'd seen my mama read the Bible. I said, where's the answer in here? There got to be an answer to this somewhere. I couldn't read it long. You know what happened? When alcohol started wearing off, I'd have to switch them. But Bible back in the drawer, get the liquor out. Take it. Alcohol would say, Jerry, you're going to get called to work here in a few minutes. I'm not drinking. Yeah, you are. You're going to drink on the job. You're going to drink when I tell you to drink, Jerry. I said, you're screwing up my life. We're not dumb people. You're going to screw up my life. Everything good was going. We'll cut the chase with this. November the 3rd, 1985, went to Cleveland, Tennessee. Had an old preacher hung around a depot up there. You know, I'd got to the point, man, I don't know about y'all, I hate to ride by a church sign. He'd say, people pray together, stay together. I'd turn my head. I didn't want to see nothing like that. That old preacher up there, he knew more about locomotives than I did. He was about like old Father Hillary I was talking about earlier, but he'd hung around the depot over in Cleveland. I'd dodge him like he had the plague. He wasn't doing nothing to me. He didn't know how much I was drinking. I was screwed up in the head. November 3rd, we went up there on a Sunday afternoon, Cleveland. Thought we was going, had an old car up there, Cheryl. God, we kept liquor. Oh, God, we had liquor. I went to the hotel. We thought we was going to be there 24 hours. I started drinking. Never turned the sheet back on the bed. Next morning, got called. Friend of mine, he did, you know, Bobby D. He took care of me a lot of time. Got called, went back over to that depot. No, it was on Sunday afternoon, we got back over, and I said, I hope an old preacher ain't over. I don't want to see him. Got over there, and Bobby took care of me a lot of time. This one, they still had cabooses on trains. I said, Bobby, let me ride the caboose. He said, Jerry, I'm sick of it. He had two of us. Had another guy. He'd get drunk when he got to Atlanta. He'd go to calling Bobby during now. We're going to get out in a little while, you know. They're going to call him, Bobby. He said, quit calling me. I'm tired of fooling you drunk. Well, Bobby told me that day, he said, Jerry, I'm tired of it. I said, get up there and do your job. I knew the party was over before that. See, I got on crying drunks in Sarasota, Florida a year before. Max Wife pulled up on the bridge down one time. I said, I can't quit drinking. People got tired of hearing me cry and say I'm sorry. Wife, girlfriend, da, da, da. I said, Bobby, I'm sorry. He said, no. He said, I'm sick of it. Get up there and do your job. I knew the party was over. I knew the gig was over. I got up on that locomotive, put my suitcase down. I remember it just like yesterday. Went, staggered back down to the third locomotive. I got on my knees. I said, face of God up there, please let something happen. I knew there was a God up there. I was raised with a God. But alcoholism had my mind so screwed up. I said, God, I don't care if we hit a gasoline truck. I don't care. And I didn't. I did not care. I'd love to tell you the last drink. No, I kept a drink in that suitcase. I knew I could not go 8 hours without drinking. We started south, and I had to have a drink when it come time to sneak around. Get home, my ex-wife done already been to every hospital around. This is family disease, and I'm so proud to see Al-Anon alive and well. But my ex, it didn't take with her, okay? She's dying from this disease today, and my son is going through hell on earth with her. But she was in the hospital's inn, and she made all the rounds. But when I got on my knees that day in Cleveland, Tennessee, that was the most important prayer I ever prayed in my life, to God help me. Come back that Monday morning, I went over to Thornton Road. She's in the hospital over there. She'd already made the ones in Ackworth and around. Went over there, and I was drunk. Didn't stay 15 minutes. I said, you tell that doctor I'll be back here tomorrow. I'm going to straighten his ass out. He's going to do something for you. Pure alcoholism. I was the problem. That Monday afternoon, I started drinking. We go to my brother's house to watch Monday night football and play poker. And I made a bet with a bookie that was way out of mine. I didn't even remember which way I bet. The next morning, I got up late. I was supposed to be there at 9 o'clock. And I wasn't a late type person, but I drank so much. And I got up, and I was in bad shape. And I drank all the blended whiskey I had. And my ex, I claimed at that time she didn't really drink that much. She'd done more other outside issues. But I claimed I had her some gin, kept gin in the kitchen. So I went in there and got me a shot of gin, poured it out in a glass, come in there, and I drank the other. And I'm just here to tell you what happened to this drunk. And it's been suggested to me to other people. When you drink anything white, such as White Lightning, vodka, gin, if it won't take hold, as my daddy called it, that means work, you're in trouble. That wasn't the first time it hadn't happened, but I drank that stuff, and it tasted like pine needles. I didn't care what it tastes like. I wanted the effect. It wouldn't take hold. That was the first time I was by myself. I looked in that mirror, and the book describes spiritual awakening, spiritual experiences. I've been taught to take what you want, leave the rest. Don't leave too much or you'll die. But take what part of this you want, leave the rest. November 5th, 1985, I was standing in front of the mirror crying, called myself a sorry SOB. And I looked in that mirror, and it's just like looking at Julie right here on my wife, and there's Charles, the picture. I said, if you don't do something, you're going to die. I was lucky enough to work for a company that had good insurance, and I called. They got me in Charter Peak for a hospital, and it was I'm one of them one-chip wonders, and I'm thankful for it. I mean, relapse is not mandatory. We talked a little bit about this, somebody over the weekend. You know, if you're young in here, and there's somebody in here tonight wondering whether this thing will work for you or not. That's Tom Eisline. He said it my first roundup. A few basic things I learned to do so far. I'm going to put this in for forget it. I get up in the morning, I ask this God that I don't understand, help me make it through the day, a lot of drink. I don't drink no liquor. I go to a meeting when I can at night, and I thank that God. And that's the way I got by for a long time, and I still do those basics. But I was lucky enough to go to Charter Peace for the hospital. Had a little lady in there that helped save my life. Her name was Lib. She was about 5 foot tall, weighed about 100 pounds, and she would hurt your feelings. I thought Sergeant Stokes was rough at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. But Lib, she'd been sober 22 years, like to die. Well, I kept talking about this brother, the sister, my daddy, and everybody else, and Lib got me one day after group. She said, Jerry, we're going to talk about Jerry. I didn't want to talk about Jerry. Had a volunteer come out there. He read to us out of a big book. He's going right over my head. I'm sure he read the doctor's opinion. Oh, good man. He was staying sober what he was doing. I wasn't getting. So Liv said, we're going to talk about it. I said, okay, Liv, let me ask you something. I kept comparing myself to Charles. He's a bean drinker. And hell, beans drinking the key, daily drinking the key, any kind of drinking the key. You do enough of it. Well, she said, Jerry, try this on. It don't matter how much you drink, what you drink, where you at when you drink it, but it's what it does to you. As a result, your ass is in the hospital. I wished I could have told you that day that I conceded to my innermost self that it talks about on page 30 in that book that I was alcoholic. That did not happen. But she planted a seed for me that I was different. I went 4 months. If you read Dr. Bob's story, you talk about, I don't know how Dr. Bob, he's tougher than me. He went 2.5 years wanting to drink. I don't know how he took it. But that 4 months of hell, I wanted to drink from the time I got up to the time I went to bed. But I kept thinking about what old Liv said. She could be right. Every time it's something else, could be right, reminding my son. I got to put this in before I forget. He was 19 when I got out of treatment. I tried to talk to him. I said, sir, I probably passed this thing on. And I'm going to just give you a heads up. I'm okay, Dad. I'm okay. I know. I was okay, too, at 19. I know. 22, he come back to me. He then went to Atlanta and got in some trouble. Come back to me. He said, you could have been right. But he had that disclaimer in there. You know, I love disclaimers, too. You know, I started off with one. Yeah, he reminded me of me. Throw that chest out there. I said, okay. Say I was right, Rich. What are you going to do about it? I'm going to quit. I said, yeah, that's great. How you going to do it? Willpower. I said, all right. I said, let me tell you what's been told to me. The next time you have diarrhea, stop it with willpower. Call me. I want to see it. '29, he come back and that ass was kicked. Excuse my language. It was kicked. It done to him what it does to a lot of the rest of us. He come to me and he said, Dad, you were right. And me being the egotistical thing I am, even my son. I said, tell me that one more time. I want to hear it. One more time without any disclaimer. You were right. I said, what you going to do about it? He said, what do you suggest? I said, what have you seen happen with me? I said, number one, get away from me. I'll help kill you. I love you too much. Getting Alcoholics Anonymous, thank God. He just celebrated 21 years. Nothing to mind. He got him a good sponsor. He don't do it to this day the way I want it done. But after that, I was sober 5 years. Well, I went that 4 months. Let me tell that. I went that 4 months in a man chair to meeting on one day at a time. You know all they say around, keep it simple, let go, let God eat. I said, where in the hell? I got a GED. I'm smarter than this. What's the matter with these people? Anybody don't know better than this? One day at a time, I asked. The man chaired the meeting. He's a professional man. I didn't have nothing to do with it because I listened to plumbers. I listened to electricians. I listened to... I want this monkey off my back. And what that man said was, I can't do this thing but one day at a time. And says, don't tell me I can't. And I might not ought to put this out, but I have to. He said, don't tell me I can't never have a drink long as I live. I said, I'll have a nut up on you. Our book says we're relieved from needing a thought. But still, this man was honest, and that's what I'm trying to be tonight. He said, I can go one day at a time. And I bought into the fact, I can show the seat I was sitting in Carville, Georgia, at the clubhouse when that happened. I said, I can do this. You know how to do it now? Corny as it sounds, one day at a time. Now, I mean, it's so simple. We were talking about somebody, I believe it was Frank. A guy I heard talk one time. I loved him, Dale Jordan Montgomery. He's in the big meeting in the sky now. You know, y'all are the craziest damn bunch of people I've been around in my life. I had to put that disclaimer out. Old George had it pegged well. He talked, and he said, what I just said, y'all crazy. He said, if you don't believe, just listen. Said old Joe over here say, well, I'm going to jail next week for 6 months. Everybody just laughed. Old Susie over here said, I lost my job. Everybody just looked bad. Next one said, well, get the divorce. Everybody did a laugh. Then somebody in the back would pop up and say, I want what y'all got. Five-year sobriety on a Thursday morning at 2 a.m. What happened to me was what the book described. At some point in time, they won't let nothing come between you and a drink but your higher power. It happened to me at 2 a.m. I got up and put on my Levi's to go to work on the railroad. Going through a divorce, a 23-year marriage, and the pain got so strong. Wasn't no sponsor there. Wasn't nobody else around. 2 a.m. I knew one thing. I hadn't forgot. He said, we don't forget. This drunk don't. I knew if the circumstance was, I wanted something to cut this thing off. And I knew what to do it. My old sponsor, gone to the big meeting in the sky now, he drilled it in my head. He said, Jerry, if you think drink, think not drink, and do what you got to do. You got the tools. I got on my knees at the second most important prayer I ever prayed in my life at 2 a.m. on a Thursday morning. I said, God, help me. I didn't sleep another wink that night. I got up and went to work on the railroad, but I did not drink. It works if you work it. Easy all the time? No. Julie talked about it last night. You're going to go through some fire in sobriety. But all in all, I don't know where y'all heard the common denominator this weekend or not, or watched it around here. The people in service is the happiest people. They're the soberest people. These conferences, I was lucky enough to get in service work, and service work's not for everybody. Just the ones that want to stay sober. That's all. I got into service work heavy, and I was involved in a home group to Macon for 8 years and made some friends at Big Mike, and I was talking about slum earlier. Got old black buddy down Macon right now, old Butch, every holiday, don't text and all. You know, a group that normally wouldn't mix. Arrogant old, grippy old rascal, you know, he comes out, round up, and he's bitching about something all the time. I'm Butch. I love him like whatever. If I called him right now, he'd be there. I believe that with all my heart. Only in Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked for this all my life. I couldn't find it. All the wrong places, the song said, you know. All right. Got a divorce. And I started sharing that I had the worst divorce that anybody ever had. They didn't fully understand my home group. My sponsor was tired of hearing it. Everybody was tired of hearing it. I said, I better move this on down the road a little. So I come from Carville to Kennesaw. I was sharing at the depot group one night. This guy named Carl, cancer got him, a super nice guy. He waited the meeting over. He wasn't a loudmouth drunk like me. Carl was a great, great guy. The meeting was at the depot, actually at the depot. Train coming by, and you couldn't hardly hear at the time they moved it. Anyway, Carl, I know we'll forget. Come out on the porch thing in front of that depot, and old Carl said, I want to talk to you a minute, Jerry. I thought to myself, I'd do a little more figuring. I said, now, what's Carl got that he can say about this that nobody else ain't come up with? I was judging, you know, contempt prior to investigation and this magic magnifying mind of mine. Oh, shit. Go out there, and I said, I'm going to listen to Carl. I respect the Carl. He said, Jerry, I want to share something with you. He said, old man shared it with me. He said, if you'll work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, keep your butt straight, God will take out whatever needs to go, and he'll put back whatever needs to be there. I told you I like a disclaimer sometimes, sometimes I don't. But what he didn't tell me was, it'd take 6 years. But there she said. stayed active, been active. Roundup, I get to do a group over at the hospital. That started several years ago, and them drunks helped me more. You talking about, and success rate is not good. But it's myself, a guy I sponsor, he go with me now. And every once in a while, I get pissed off. I said, Don, we ain't doing no good. He said, Jerry, you and I are staying sober. I said, oh, you think you're Lois Wilson now or somebody else. Yeah. I It's been a blessing for me. Get to go and see them drunks, shaking it out, trying to get sober. You know. The Roundup has been a blessing to me. I've been involved with. I've been able to go to Jeanette and I got married, and I got to tell you about that. And it's, she tell a little bit different stories. See, I put that disclaimer out for a lot of reasons. A lot of times she didn't hear stuff exactly like I put. Now, went to that class reunion at Ackworth Beach, and I'm the type drunk. I learned early on, I'm not bragging about this, it's just the way it was. I knew how to fall in lust, but I didn't know how to fall in love. Okay? People in alcoholics, anonymous, taught me how to love. Big old men hugging on each other. Like, what the hell the matter with them? You know, next thing, it starts changing. Remember where I come from, grown men don't cry and they don't say I love you. It's just the way I was raised. Just getting AA and y'all start turning that shit around. Anyway, our best friends talked us both into going to that reunion. Called and we hooked up. Well, the sad part, my MO is the whistles and bells is supposed to go on off, supposed to be going on. It didn't happen. I'm not a real quick study. I think I talked to Hill about it. I can't even swear to that. But anyhow, I talked to other people and I said, I don't know, this gal. We started dating. She said, exactly what do you want out of a relationship? I said, hell, I want it all. I'm out. She said, what'll it take? I said, blonde, 5'2", makes $100,000 a year. And she said, I'm not 5'2", and I don't make $100,000. I said, you close enough. But what happened on the serious side? Take what you want, leave the rest. Went down to her house to pick her up. I don't know how many months in. 3 months. I don't know. She might tell you more than I can about that. She lived down off Whitlock Avenue, ran a townhouse. Went to the door, went in. She come walking down the stairway from upstairs. She had on a fine outfit. Something come all over me. And I said, what in the world?
It is.
Here I am, 50 years old. That ain't what they're talking about. It can't be. The lust part, we done. I done went through. I said, this must be what they're talking about. This is love. That's what you people. I've been given so much in this program, I never can give it back. And we've been on a journey, and it all hadn't been pretty. She told you some of it this morning. But it's unbelievable. If you'd have told me that's what happened to me in sobriety. A drunk like me that come on the wrong side of the tracks. Could be happy, joyous, and free. You're looking at old fart. You see, they say, how you become an old timer, Jerry? I said, don't drink, don't die. That's what happened. But I've got to live two lives. Has it all been perfect? No, but this second life is no comparison. No comparison. We've been able to travel. I've been able to do things and get to see guys get sober and get to share what Carl shared with me, what my sponsor shared with me. It's just an ongoing deal. If I don't pass it on, I can't keep it. A lot of people. I've seen a lady the other night, 20 years sobriety. Quit going, quit passing on. You know what happened? One time, a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I want to keep on getting what I'm getting, I got to keep on doing what I'm doing. It's and I love it. I get aggravated, for a nice word to clean it up, when alcoholics get too busy, get too much, try to sponsor a guy who I back. He's trying to tell me he didn't have no ego. I said, hell, man, you're in the wrong place. I ain't never seen an alcoholic yet. It wasn't full of ego and self-esteem on the floor. That's just the way we come in here. And you can reverse it a little bit. You work this program, you can reverse it. If you had told me I'd got to do some of the things that I've got to do in sobriety, I would have told you it's crazy. Because Alcoholics Anonymous will bring back. You see, all the circumstances wasn't what got me. If I thought there's one more good buzz in that one more drink, I would have been out there. But it quit working for me is what happened to this drunk. I didn't lose everything, just most everything. The job was going, the wife was going, the son was going. But if you'd have told me that I was going to get to live the life I've got to live, and I got early retirement from the railroad, I've been involved with a lot of service work, involved going places, and get to work at a golf course at a starter and get to tell people what to do. Mr. Jones, your ass ain't teeing off till 9 o'clock. I love it. It's just in me, you know. And then they pay me to do this a little bit, and then they let me play free golf. I never had it so good. Well, Jeanette and I started on this journey, and she told her story this morning. I hope some of you heard it. When she was talking about the old other alcoholic she'd married to, I'd been around here just long enough to know. I've watched Al-Anon work. And I said, exactly what is it you like about alcoholics? She said, I don't know. I said, I suggest you find out before we go any further. And Al-Anon has helped make our relationship just as much as Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's a family disease. And we've been to international convention. We've been to, got to do a lot of traveling. Jeanette started having physical problems and health problem, I mean. And I had some. And to give you a little example, a drunk like me that's got to play Pebble Beach. All this stuff is directly or indirectly, one way or another, affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous. My man from Oregon, I thought about it. I'm going to tell this. Got a God story there to tell. 2000, some friends of ours in Rome, Georgia, moved back to Southern California. We went out to see them. We was going to drive from Southern California to Seattle. A trip of a lifetime. I was charged up. Baby. I had it all figured out. 1,800 miles. Had it just laid out. Never dreamed I was going to get to play Pebble Beach Golf Course. Had it not been for her, it wouldn't have happened. That's another story in itself. I was giving up. She don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle. What the hell you know? Quit saying my AA stuff. Her daddy was in the Army. World War II, and stationed in Bend, Oregon, right in the center part of the state. She said, my daddy always said that's the prettiest place he ever seen. He wanted to go back. I said, would you like to go? I said, does Bend, Oregon look like it's on this map I got laid out? We going straight line right up the coast. There ain't no Bend, Oregon in there. That's over. She knows how to. She's been around enough alcoholics, she knows how to work them. Next day I come in, she had a golf magazine laying there where the senior open played in Bend, Oregon, a beautiful golf course. I said, Bend, Oregon may not be so bad after all. We go to Bend, Oregon. Man in Southern California called to line up a golf course. Stuff has come my way, it's unbelievable. Get there, go out there and pull up in the parking lot. Driving ranges up there, and you never know anything about God. Seen this old man hobbling around up there, you know. My ego, I was 15 years, 17 years younger than myself. You know, I said, I'll probably get paired with that old so-and-so, and it's going to be a long day. You know. Get up here on the driving range, start hitting ball. Call my name. Mr. Beard, number one, T, Mr. Jones. I see him hobbling his ass all around. I said, oh, Lord. Get down on number one tee. Jeanette and his wife are down there hollering, and y'all know she's like me. She can be heard. And, you know, put it in a nice way. Jeanette went to holler, no, it can't be. No, it can't be. I looked at him, I looked at her. His wife had told us, said, my husband was stationed here the same time your daddy was. They got started talking. The golf course we was playing was on the training site that her and her daddy, they didn't know each other now, but they was there at the same time in 1942, and that was the training site and they turned it into a golf course. We went on a tour that day. I couldn't even play golf. He'd say, "This is where the rifle range is." And said, no, it ain't. What was the odds? That man had been living there 15 years, retired. He is moving back to Idaho in 2 weeks. It's only a God thing. It happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. Happiest, one of the happiest times I've ever seen her to get here about her daddy get to share. Things like that happen. I could talk from now on. She started having health issues, back surgery, da-da-da-da-da. As you can probably already tell, I'm not the most patient cat in the world. Things started happening. She continued to work, trying to. Time's about up. I'm going to cut this thing up. We got to go to two. I've been blessed to go to four AA Internationals, and Jeanette told this morning, some of you didn't hear, they had a 2013 Al-Anon International in Vancouver, Canada. Well, it's all about me. I'd saved money. We'd been to Hawaii. I got to play Kapalua in Hawaii. I got to play in Scotland after the Internationals to impress you. All of it. Direct results. I want to go to Alaska, and I was saving money. Jeanette said, "I want to go to Vancouver." Vancouver, though. I don't know. They're sending out things if you want to speak or if you want a chair, you know. Hell, I want to be the Saturday night speaker, but that didn't work out. For the AA side of it. They had. Anyway, I got to go there, and like she said this morning, I got to be a. Sort of hurt my ego. They want me to chairperson. They had three other speakers, and I just was a timekeeper. All I was. I wanted to be speaking, but it didn't work out that way. My ego. Anyway, what happened? I want to take you through this just a minute. She told you a big part of it, but what this program will do, it'll work in the good or the bad, okay? If you wondered, it'll work in the good and the bad. The good was I was standing there chairing that meeting in Vancouver looking over that beautiful sight. And she described this morning in my air, seaplanes coming in, landing, cruise ships over here. I said, "Jerry," to myself, "what have you done to deserve this, to be here? Those thoughts just come. I get to thinking every once in a while." I said, "Don't get no better than this. We got to take a beautiful trip. We got to come home." This is July of 2013. 9/11 2013, she was diagnosed with third stage lymphoma in intensive care. I said, "God, what have I done to deserve this?" I still think, well, maybe she got a stronger program. She handled it better than I did. She told about some of it this morning, but the doctor, the oncologist, she had the family doctor help save her life. He found it and da-da-da-da-da, sent her. But the oncologist, this program is everywhere. His ex-wife got somebody else asked me to speak over their deal. Long story short, after a period of time, and he could be a horse's ass. Sort of like, you know, if you got it, you can spot it. You know what I'm saying? Because I'd asked him a simple question, and one time she had a real bad spell, and I started diagnosing her. He said, "All I want is the symptoms. I don't want the diagnosis out of you, Mr. Beard." You don't talk to an alcoholic like that. I don't care what. Shit. Excuse my language. Come to find out, he found out later on, and we found out I was in the program. When this thing settled, he come over to me and he said, "I was so honored to treat y'all," and said, "you've done a good job supporting her." Y'all taught me how when I'm insulted, keep my damn mouth shut sometimes because I'm wrong sometimes. He shut me up, he put me in my place, and he diagnosed and took care of my wife. Okay, I'm going to close it with this. You talk about these God things. During this time, she wound up in the cancer center. Wasn't in intensive care, but things wasn't real good. And that little grandson she talked about this morning, there wasn't supposed to be no kids in there, no, and everybody had to wear uniforms to get in there to see her. There wasn't no, well, God put a little nurse in my way. I said, look, this woman is stressed out. All this going on. Is there any way I can get that grandboy? She said, bring that little germ carrier on down here. So we're going to get him in there. And she did. And so I went that night and got us a pizza, and we had a party in the cancer center. And I kept looking back and where I'm heading with this. In that same center, her sister came. We had lunch the day before at Wellstar. And I seen this little lady working behind the counter. I knew I'd seen her before, but I didn't know where. I had no clue what her name was. Went through the line, said, hey, Jerry, I seen you up in Carl. I said, you did? Good. Hell, I can't remember her name, so. She just lit up, you know. The next morning, there wasn't nobody around, and things wasn't real good. Jeanette said, I believe I could eat one of those banana muffins you and Becky was talking about over there. I said, would you go get me one? I said, yeah. Went over there and there's that same little lady. She walked through that door right now. I wouldn't know her name. She'd been at a meeting of you. You can bet on that. Walked over and there's people lined up in this line. Hey, Jerry, how you doing? I said, hey, baby. She said, come on up here. I said, what am I going to do about it? She said, what do you want? I said, my wife wants them banana muffins. Said, yeah. She went and got it. And I seen a guy looking at it real funny. I don't know where he's her boss or whatever. She said, hey, Jerry, she said, you want a little butter on this thing? I said, yeah. That'd be good. I needed that morning. You don't never know where it's going to come from, y'all. Okay? And all I suggest to you, if you keep coming back, somebody will butter that muffin for you. I don't know if I said a thing to help y'all tonight or not, but I appreciate, again, the committee. I appreciate you having me here. And if you don't hear nothing else, come back. Thank you. I'm not moving.